Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. I'm your host, Shannon Brinius, and today we are talking about a very important component of the coronavirus response. You know, it's been just over 2 months since Governor Jared Polis issued a state of emergency in Colorado in response to the COVID-19 outbreak, and we have seen the rate of confirmed cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in Colorado decreasing, and definitely El Paso County has reflected a better percentage rate of that than compared to other similarly sized counties. However, as the stay-at-home order is lifting and businesses are reopening, we still need to be diligent to ensure that the trend continues. And as we talk about this public health crisis, we know the impacts, but especially they have been felt most tenderly on the most vulnerable in our community. And so joining me this morning with an update on the Emergency Relief Fund, that's a local fund supporting nonprofits through El Paso and Teller counties. We have Mina Liebert, who's the Director of Community Impact for the Pikes Peak Community Foundation, and Diane Price, who's the President and CEO of Early Connections Learning Centers. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us on The Extra.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning, Shannon.
And
thank you.
Diane, we know that Early Connections Learning Centers is one of the 54 nonprofits that have received funding from the Emergency Relief Fund. We're going to be talking to you in just a bit, but first I want to start with Mina. Let's give a little background on the Pikes Peak Community Foundation for our listeners. What can you tell us about the foundation's mission and work?
Thank you so much, Shannon. So good morning, everyone. The Pikes Peak Community Foundation has been a community resource for charitable giving since 1928. So we're about 92 years old, and we really intend to inspire generosity and serve the donors that are that have funds with us in order to really effectively mobilize resources and address truly any issue that's facing the Pikes Peak region.
And when and why was the Emergency Relief Fund formed?
So when we activated this for COVID-19 in mid-March, we had never experienced a pandemic before. So previously, the Emergency Relief Fund was activated in 2012 and 13 during the Waldo Canyon fires, and then in Black Forest, and then also with the Manitou floods. And when there is a state of emergency issued within a municipality, and in obviously this case across the state and across the country, this fund has the ability to be activated.
And does having a fund like this, does it, I guess, make you more flexible in how you're able to respond to needs than in normal times?
Right. So I think when you consider what a state of emergency is, it shifts and changes based on the actual event itself. And with this, I don't think that anybody, at least in my generation, has experienced a pandemic. And we are kind of reacting as we go. And we're hoping that we're flexible and fluid in the way in which we're deploying these funds. We saw that initial spike of truly essential human needs, and we continue to see that. It just has evolved and changed over the last 2 months.
And we know that people have come forward to help contribute. How much has been raised, and who's been contributing?
So since mid-March, we have been able to raise $1.5 million, pretty close to that, and really, it's been a combination of individual donors, so residents within the Pikes Peak region, which we serve El Paso and Teller County, as well as foundations, so private foundations, philanthropic individuals, and this partnership that we're building with a group of collective funders. Really, our mission is to really try and drive this collective giving so that we can be able to support as many organizations as possible.
Yeah, because listening to this, I think we all can imagine that the need far outweighs the resources. You know, how much has been requested in grants and help?
How much has been requested? So yeah, it's been pretty heavy. We've had over $4.4 million in requests since mid-March, and we've had 9 rounds of grant grant opportunities, and we're continuing to do so. We know that the need continues, again, with the evolution of how COVID is affecting individuals and families in the region. We're hoping that our flexibility in how we're prioritizing our basic human needs are reflective of that. Mm-hmm. So again, while we see, you know, organizations that are really elevated and deploying all of their resources, we want to help support that as much as possible. Like a great example is Early Connections Learning Centers.
Mm. And so we know Early Connections Learning Centers is one. What other kinds of nonprofit organizations have been applying for funding?
Yeah, so over the last 2 months, we've had quite a few. We've had over 100 organizations apply. And again, the need is great and the dollars are limited. So Catholic Charities of Central Colorado has been a strong partner, and Partners in Housing. We're really looking at, again, addressing those basic human needs, housing and shelter being one of them, Family Promise, and then also Pikes Peak Habitat for Humanity, Inside Out Youth Services, again, those that are deploying and providing information and opportunity on the ground for people. That's really where we're trying to focus and prioritize these funds.
Well, and all were the organizations that you're listing off there. If people want to find out more information, if they've been listening and are saying, you know, things have calmed down in our household, I do have some free dollars, I'd like to make a donation, where should they go?
Yeah, if they are interested and willing, the Pikes Peak Community Foundation's website is ppcf.org, and you can do /relief and you'll go straight to that site. Otherwise, if you go to our main page, it does a pop-up and you can click Give Now. And we welcome any support. These dollars go right back out to the organizations that are truly impacting those that are most deeply affected by COVID-19.
And we know the struggle is very real for those nonprofit organizations that have seen their normal activities, but also fundraisers, their normal fundraising activities, just completely dissipate because of the coronavirus pandemic. A lot of plans have been changed. We are speaking with Mina Liebert, who's the Director of Community Impact for the Pikes Peak Community Foundation. But we also have on the line Diane Price, who's the President and CEO of Early Connections Learning Centers. And coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about the families and clients that her organization serves, how they are benefiting from the grants made through the PPCF. We're back in a few moments with more of The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to KRDO News Radio's The Extra, the show that brings you and connects you with the topics, issues, and people that are important to you. And today we are talking with representatives from the Pikes Peak Community Foundation about their worthwhile work, especially with the Emergency Relief Fund that was activated with the coronavirus pandemic. Meanwhile, we also have Diane Price, who's the president and CEO of Early Connections Learning Centers. And Diane, first of all, tell me a little bit about your organization.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Shannon. Thank you. Early Connections Learning Centers was founded in 1897 by a group of 14 women in Colorado Springs who were concerned about the welfare of children and families moving here for tuberculosis. And so they formed the Day Nursery Association. And through the last 24 years, we have expanded our services from one location to multiple sites. We have four full-day, full-year programs. We have a school-age program at Sand Creek Elementary School. We run court care for the Pikes Peak region, and we have a network of family child care homes. Our mission is to provide support, high-quality early care and education to working families in Colorado Springs, and to really ensure that all children have access to the highest quality education in those early years to help them be successful in their school and in their life.
Well, and we know that daycares were one of those unique businesses that while everyone else was being told to stay at home, many essential workers didn't have that option. They had to go to work and there needed to be child care provided in some cases. So how has your organization, Diane, been impacted by COVID-19?
So I think it's kind of been, I don't want to say business as usual, because this has not been business as usual in our world and in our country and in our community. Mm-hmm. But for us, we decided very early on, March 12th is when schools announced that they'd be closing for a week before spring break, and we serve school-aged children, and so we had a conversation as a leadership group, and we said, we'll be here for those families. They have to work. We want to make sure that the children have the opportunity to continue their care and education. And so it just started evolving with a decision to stay open and make sure that we were available for children and families. We had a lot of families enrolled. We were about 100% enrolled. We had over 280 children who were coming to our programs each day. And I think the initial impact was just sort of a decline in the number of children who were attending. Mm-hmm. We felt we would be here for those families, but we wanted to not add any additional stress if they were choosing not to come. We wanted them to know we would be there for them. That we would support their children. We would try to keep things as normal as we possibly could for the lives of their kiddos, because we knew each family's lives were changing, as all of ours were, in very different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. So it was really just keeping our doors open, having our teachers be here to greet our children and families, and ensuring that they had a place to be kids.
Mm-hmm. And it's a place to be kids, but at the same time, you have to ensure their safety. What kind of protocols did you put in place to protect the kids and families?
You know, it's interesting. Early care and education has pretty rigid guidance around hand washing and cleanliness. It's just sort of the way we operate. And so although we always do work, always encouraging and having children wash their hands before and after activities, much more hand washing obviously was put in place, and beginning to look at how children were interacting and how could we, you know, divide classes a little differently. We added some additional daily cleaning routines that were not required by the health department. We were sanitizing and cleaning common areas every hour, wiping down doorknobs, wiping down hard surfaces, wiping down light switches, you know, the kind of things that people touch that you just kind of take for granted that you're walking around and you touch them. And so we began to really implement a more rigorous cleaning and sanitizing procedures and practices within our organizations. And I think that was the big thing for us, hand sanitizer by our check-in stations for families, making sure that parents are washing their hands before they went into classrooms. Parents are not going into classrooms now. Some things have changed. But it's evolved over the last 10 weeks, and things have changed significantly. Every time something happens with the Department of Health or with the Office of Early Childhood or the governor's orders, and we typically will see some kind of new requirements or mandates or suggestions for us. Yeah, something to implement.
Yeah, and you know, my daughter was in a daycare when I was working and she was growing up, and I can say that just as my observation, there is a lot of money that is spent on the care of children, and when you look at profit margins that are, you have a lot of built-in expenses that you can't get around. I assume that when enrollment dropped, there was a sudden need to readjust and strategize how you were going to get through financially. How did the funds that came from the Emergency Relief Fund help support your organization, and how desperate were you to get them?
Well, it was very impactful, and we were really grateful for the support. I believe we're one of the very early organizations that received funding. We received a $50,000 grant. It was huge, significant impact to our operations. One of the things that we decided early on was that we didn't want to add stress to our families around fees. And there were some organizations that were closing down, telling parents they wanted to charge them to hold their slot for their child. We decided not to do that. We immediately told all of our families, call our finance department, we'll make arrangements. We're not charging you if you're not coming. This is a decision for you to make, and we don't want to add any financial burden to things that might already be going on. We serve a lot of all working families, a lot of single parents, people that were in the service industry. They were essential workforce, grocery store workers, CNAs, people that were in healthcare. You know, we had people that were working in the court system. There were places that, you know, have stayed open and they needed support for their children. And so, you know, we said we would be here, but we weren't going to add any additional burden to them financially. Quite frankly, when it first started, we didn't know quite how we were going to get through it, but we knew we would. We'd been around for a long time, and we felt confident that we'd be able to figure this out, and our community would support us, and our families would support us in the best way that they could. And so we're fortunate that we have funding from Pikes Peak United Way. We have partnerships with CPCD, Giving Children a Head Start, School District 11, the Colorado Preschool Program. So we had some continuous funding that was coming in to support our operations, and that really helped us. But we weren't sure how we were going to get from one week to the next. So this grant from the community, this emergency grant from the Community Foundation, was incredibly helpful and really gave us some breathing room for a while till we could begin to figure out how operations would work.
Oh, Diane Price, I'm glad that it was there for you. Glad that the community had stepped up to provide that money. And again, if you want to learn more about Early Connections, you can go to their website, earlyconnections.org. We have more on The Extra coming up after the break. We're going to be rejoining Mina Liebert talking about the fundraising efforts, how they're going and what they're doing. That's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to the second half hour of KRDO News Radio's The Extra. And today we are focusing on an organization that is doing a lot of good in our community, the Pikes Peak Community Foundation. And joining us on the phone, we've been talking with Diane Price, who's one of the heads up one of the nonprofits that has received funds from the Pikes Peak Community Foundation's Emergency Relief Fund. And we also have Director of Community Impact for the foundation, Mina Liebert, joining us right now. And Mina, it's been just 60 days since the governor made that announcement that I think came as a shock to many people in the community, that we were in a state of emergency and that life as we knew it was going to change drastically. At the time, we were, I think many of us were hoping maybe 2 weeks at the outset, you know, maybe 2 weeks at the uppermost range. But now it's been 6 weeks. But in that time, people have come forward to donate and to help others. And your Emergency Relief Fund has raised nearly $1.5 million, and that is helping the nonprofits in our community. How many nonprofits, Mina, so far have been awarded grants?
Thanks, Shannon. You know, we're so fortunate, again, that we were able to respond so quickly to this pandemic event, and the Pikes Peak Community Foundation is really proud to have been able to activate the Emergency Relief Fund really before the governor announced his stay-at-home order. This has been, again, an event that we have not experienced, and we are really grateful to our partners with the Emergency Relief Fund that are making this happen. So with that $1.5 million that we've raised, we have funded 56 organizations with over $1 million in awards, and we continue to grant on a weekly or biweekly basis because we know that this is not just an immediate need opportunity, but it's really about this long, mid to long-term recovery effort that we need to be focused on. And while we have done our best to try and address those organizations that are on the front lines working with individuals and families to really address their needs in order to create stability for their families, whether it's been due to job loss or, again, that flexing in how they're working with their school-aged children and creating a new normal, this is our opportunity to be able to support and assist with these organizations.
Right. Injecting the money in a very quick manner is so critical right now. These organizations don't have time to wait around on the natural process that you might experience where things would get heard a first time, a second time, maybe need to go back for revisions when you're talking about grant applications. In terms of the nonprofits like Early Connections Learning Centers that have been awarded grants, can you share some information on some of the other ones?
Yes, absolutely. You know, again, we have had a number of organizations apply, and the committee really wanted to focus on prioritizing basic human needs. And within that, those parameters are really along the lines of supporting food and food distribution, housing, so whether that's rental or mortgage assistance or utility assistance, medical transportation, and also mental health services. And that's done through our telehealth work. And a lot of our organizations that were equipped to do this work in person didn't really have the capacity to do this through technology. So some of the work that we've done is really to elevate these organizations to be able to do their critical work. And we're looking at individuals that are working with the immigrant or refugee population and homeless adults and youth and those that have been impacted by other traumas like domestic violence, and then our military and veteran population. So when you're thinking about a Servicios de la Raza or Centro de la Familia, they're working with our Spanish-speaking populations and trying to make sure that they have the resources in their native language that will help them and their families really move forward. The same goes with Homefront Military Network and the veteran and military families that they serve, and they're trying to adjust and adapt just like all of us are and trying to do all that they can to support those families that they are connected to.
And I think that's one thing that is great about the Emergency Relief Fund is that we know that there's a centralized location or a centralized place to give to during this time where the needs are being evaluated by a group that actually has experience doing this. It's not us having to make that judgment call. We can give to the Emergency Relief Fund and actually see those centralized dollars go to work in a much more directed way.
Yes, absolutely. I think, again, the key with this for the Pikes Peak Community Foundation is collective giving and collective grant making. We have the ability to have access to over 200 of our donors. And these are, again, individuals that are philanthropic and charitable and want to be able to support their community. They have their own personal interests, but also have the ability to really work together and combine with our larger private foundations, as well as any individual that may not have a donor base with us. But the point is that collective giving and really centralizing dollars is critical, and we vet all of the organizations. We know, we trust what they're doing. We know that they have established credibility, and that's one of the best things. So if you're not giving directly to the nonprofit, to the Emergency Relief Fund is a great way to go, and knowing that your dollars are going to be given to the organizations that are doing the most critical work that's on the ground right now supporting, again, things like food and housing and keeping families truly just stable in this time of uncertainty.
Well, and we encourage anyone who wants to find out more to go to ppcf.org. We still have another segment of The Extra to go. We are going to be talking again with Diane Price, who's with Early Connections Learning Centers. And we just need to find out some more about how children have been impacted during this coronavirus pandemic and how their organization, among the many that are recipients of the Emergency Relief Fund through the Pikes Peak Community Foundation, are utilizing those dollars to help create more comfort and ease for those families who do have workers who are in essential services. That's coming up after this break. We'll be back with more of The Extra. And we're back with The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. I'm your host, Shannon Brinius, and we've been talking in the past segment with Mina Liebert, who's the Director of Community Impact for the Pikes Peak Community Foundation. We're focusing on the Community Foundation's work during this pandemic when they activated the Emergency Relief Fund. And we also have here on the line Diane Price, who's the CEO of Early Connections Learning Centers, one of the grant recipients through the Emergency Relief Fund. And Diane, due to COVID-19, we know childcare facilities are one of those facilities that had to stay open to provide care for essential workers. But I'm assuming that guidelines have changed for how you operate.
Absolutely. Guidelines and kind of operations have changed. We initiated very early on virtual communication with our families and lessons with our families, and the opportunity to, for our teachers to connect with children through Facebook, but it also through videos and lessons that were sent out every day, lesson plans, activities. And so we've maintained a lot of really good contact with children, and we helped families understand their role as their child's first and best teacher and how they could engage with families. And that was a big change for us. Early care and education, child care, we're face-to-face. We're, you know, down on the floor with children. And
oh,
so
you
when
bet.
Your numbers start to drop, you know, you see a need to deliver your services in a different kind of way. But we also got new, very different and new health and operations guidelines. And they were welcome guidelines for us because we really didn't know how to go through something like this. This is nothing we had faced before in our community. And so depending on our health department, listening to our health department, calling them when we had questions, there's a gal at the local health department. She and I have become new best friends. I've never met her, but, you know, we text each other with questions and comments, and I call her when something, you know, when I need
to clarify
know
one of the rules or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because mm-hmm. things have changed so rapidly. We are now, as most places are, masks are required for all of the adults in our center. So all of our teachers, all of our staff are wearing masks. Parents are wearing masks when they come into our buildings. Parents are dropping children off at the door of the classrooms, not entering into the classrooms anymore. We're doing social distancing at the check-in and check-out stations where families check in on the computer, let us know they're here, and where they check out. We're taking temperatures of the adult. Every person at the beginning of the shift, the end of the shift, have their temperatures taken. We're asking that parents take their children's temperatures at home. We're not doing that yet. It's not required. So that's not something we have to do. The biggest change for us in early care and education have been the group sizes. Staying with group sizes of 10 or no more than 10 people, our capacity in all of our centers and in our classrooms throughout child care in Colorado have been reduced significantly. I would say typically in a preschool classroom with 3 and 4-year-olds, you might have 15, 16. Some centers might have 20 children in a classroom. We typically have about 16 in a classroom. We're no longer allowed to have 16 children. We can only have 10. And then 2 teachers. So the teacher number has stayed the same. The child number has been reduced. We're encouraged, and we do, keep them in the same classroom all day long with the same teachers all day. So we don't have staff going in and out. Helping, moving. We're not moving kids at the beginning of the day or the end of the day. And so that's been an adjustment for us and will be an adjustment for those organizations that start to open up. And that allows us to really look at smaller group sizes, doing things with smaller numbers of children, spacing out in our classrooms, spacing out on our playgrounds differently. So that's been, I think, the biggest impact, and that will affect early care and education for a long time in our state because it really does reduce the capacity of what we're able to serve when we move into and as we move through this pandemic, but we move into recovery. And working with our licensing agencies and the health department as we begin to take a look at what is safe. And these are the recommendations that are coming from the CDC. So for our organization, it's reduced our capacity, the number of children who can actually be in attendance by about 100 kiddos.
Right, wow.
And so when families, and as I mentioned previously, we were 100% enrolled, so you know, if families, when they come back, we may or may not be able to serve all the families. Now, some families may have lost their jobs and they don't need childcare right now, and so, you know, it will work its way through. But I think that's the most significant change that we've seen in terms of guidelines and how we be responsive to keeping children safe and healthy and the adults that care for them safe and healthy.
Well, and when you look at that, I'm sure the funding from the Emergency Relief Fund and the Pikes Peak Community Foundation has done wonders for at least easing some of your burdens during this time of crisis. Dealing with kids, one of the most important jobs that is out there shaping the generation to come. We appreciate the work that you're doing, Diane Price, to keep our kids safe and educated and cared for while their parents are needing to work, perhaps on the front lines of this coronavirus pandemic. I'd like to thank my guest today, Diane Price, who's the CEO of Early Connections Learning Centers. If you'd like to find out more, their website is earlyconnections.org, as well as Mina Liebert, who's with the Pikes Peak Community Foundation, whose emergency relief fund, the foundation's fund, has been activated during the coronavirus pandemic and continues to award grants and as well as take in donations. They've reached $1.5 million in the time since the fund was activated. We certainly hope that goes more, because we know that the need outweighs the amount of grants that they're able to give at this point, even though we know this community has an amazing giving spirit. So if you'd like to find out more about the Community Foundation, you can go to PikesPeakCommunityFoundation.org to donate or to apply for funding. I'd like to thank my guests, Diane Price and Mina Lieber. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Shannon. We appreciate it.
Oh, definitely. I appreciate having you on The Extra on KRDO News Radio.